Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Michael Morris. And yesterday I started with the disclaimer that I may be a little bit more incoherent than usual due to the extreme heat in Cape Town. And boy, today is on another level. So, do please bear with us. Still, we've got some important things to talk about, and I'm joined today by Michael Morris. Let's start off with our first story, and we got some GDP numbers, which are the best we've had in a while. South Africa's economic mood has improved somewhat. South Africa's economy grew by 1.1% in 2025, which is its strongest annual performance since 2022. As our colleague Anlu Kievers notes in a press release that we put out today, this is welcome progress. A closer examination reveals less reassuring picture. When you look at where a lot of things came from, finance, real estate, business services, and agriculture were all adding significantly to the economic growth. Whereas some of the important sectors that sort of are connected to longer-term investment and productivity, such as construction, electricity, gas, water, manufacturing, all subtracted from the GDP growth. In fact, they all experienced shrinkage, with construction having negative growth of minus 4.4% year on year in the latest GDP figures. Household consumption grew a bit, which is good, but also at the same time, if your productivity isn't increasing in your economy, there's a limit to how far that can go. Anlu says that this shows that South Africa is bending its way to limited economic growth it is managing to achieve, but that growth is not being driven by production and investment. Households continue to support activity, but domestic industries did not expand at the same pace. This is not a durable basis for growth. In fact, the news may be even slightly more complicated, which is that senior analyst at the Bureau for Food and Agricultural Policy has even raised some questions about the growth in the agricultural sector, suggesting that I believe the 17% referred to by Stats SA was perhaps an over-exaggeration, saying the 17.4% points in the right direction of growth, but maybe slightly higher than we expect and requires a second look. There's also a larger discussion about how reliable Stats SA statistics are ever since the sort of disaster that was the most recent census. So, Michael, obviously this is movement in the right direction, but it is, I think, highlighting many of the things we've been saying over a long period of time, which is that we need fundamental changes to how our economy is working, and that a lot of the sort of happy talk recently, I think, has been a bit overblown. The situation is better than it was, but it's still not very good. Are you going to join me in raining on our parade, or do you have a different view?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think one of the great virtues of good data is that you are compelled to be a realist. Just to come back to your point about, you know, Stats SA and the veracity of its numbers, we have for just about ever, as the IRR, been rely on sources of data like Stats SA. They've always been very good. I'm sure they are still very good, but they themselves have indicated that they, you know, need more spending on whatever it is that they need, researchers or research tools and so on. It's a hugely important function in society, and to the extent that that kind of data reflects badly on a long-standing administration, the risk is always that that long-standing administration is going to want to undercut the spending to such research, if only to try and protect itself from the damaging implications of bad numbers. So we sincerely hope that Stats SA wins the argument and does manage to keep up that sort of very high standard that we certainly rely on at the IRR and our partners in the CRA. We need these numbers. We need to see how we're doing. Even if we're not doing well, it doesn't mean that we pack up and go anywhere else. There's nowhere else for us to go. We just try harder. But we do need to know what the numbers are. Whether it's a question of raining on the parade, I think there's certainly of that. The way Anlu, our colleague which is economic policy research analyst at the IRR, she begins by saying that, you know, the economic mood in South Africa has brightened, but the fundamentals are not following at the same pace. And that really is where the attention needs to fall. Just one element of this one data point, which I know our boss, John Andrews, the CEO of the IRR, keeps emphasizing, as do others who are much cleverer than I am when it comes to anything economic, keep focusing on, is gross fixed capital formation. This has decreased by 2.2% year on year, contributing 0.3% of a percentage point to GDP. So it's a decline, and this is really, you know, this is buildings, concrete in the ground. This is a material manifestation of investor confidence in the country, in the economy, and people saying, we hear
for longer term things, right?
We hear for the long term. Yeah. So we're not thinking of, you know, we put in some money and hope to make some, but we want to be able to get it out quickly if there's a problem. This is people who are saying, we see solid fundamentals here, steady improvement, good policy, and we're going to sink stuff in the ground for, you know, the next 25 years. It's not simply the next quarter or the next two quarters. And that is really, I mean, 2.2% down. That's a worry. We've got to work on that. You were about to say it.
You know, at the end of the day, productivity is just absolutely key to an economy.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a lot of stuff without productivity, of course. It's not the all in it all, but at the end of the day, your economy needs to be more productive. And ours just has been struggling on this front. When you see something like construction being down, when you see manufacturing going down, you can see that there's a lack of some of those fundamentals there. And that, of course, has big social consequences. You know, for years, the finance sector, which has once again grown, has continued to hold up the South African economy in so many ways. But it's clear that I think we may be somewhat at the limits of where that can be, right, for now at least. And this is why we need to make it easier for businesses to produce, for businesses to grow, for businesses to be to hire and fire. And we need to, you know, see where government can save money so that we can avoid taxing so much. The high taxes, I think, are essentially taking money from people who are producing, who are adding to the economy for the most part, and funneling it into a government system where vast amounts of it are lost to sort of, you know, very unproductive activities. As we know that, unfortunately, our government is extremely inefficient for a variety of reasons, not least of all the procurement stuff that we talk about very often. So I think this is a very important note of caution about where we are as a society right now. Don't get carried away by the happy talk. Be happy that things are moving in the right direction, but the limited reforms we've seen so far from government and the GNU are not even close to actually being able to fix the problem. And I think, by and large, there is some, even from government, there's some sort of tacit acknowledgement that is the case. Any final thoughts on this one?
Yeah. I mean, I think your last point is very important. You know, there are signs that there's a kind of acknowledgement that you know, the fundamental things need to change. We need to rethink certain basics of how we're doing things. And we certainly think so, as the IRR. But we need the government to, and we need big business and all of business actually to do the same. Very interesting remarks. I think our CEO John has written John Andrews has written a piece which we're going to be publishing tomorrow on Leo Bozell's, the new U.S. ambassador, his presentation at a conference in Hermanus, in which he speaks about this uncanny thing that we know very well all about, and most South Africans do, is that businesses say things privately which they won't say in public. There's this undue politesse. It's a completely unhelpful and, in fact, not respectful a posture that's adopted by so much business, that they will not say publicly what really worries them in case it's misperceived or in case there's controversy. One understands that businesses don't like controversy. That's not their business. As a long-time journalist, it took me years and years and years to understand this. Controversy is what we live on, but businesses don't. They've got a different order of things. But their future is now at stake. And as Brazil has said, he would like to hear businesses saying publicly what he keeps hearing in private from them. And if you look at, just a few other figures that ANU brings out, exports from South Africa. We know we're an amazing country with an astonishing capacity to do things, just all kinds of resources, all kinds of clever things, innovation. Exports decreased by 2.5% year on year. There's really no excuse for that at all. We've got a massive labor force. We've got lots of bright ideas, bright young people. Something is getting in the way of enterprise and dynamism and imagination. Exports decreased by 2.5%. Imports grew by 1.1%. And ANU's key point is, that what the growth that we have seen, there has been this growth since 2022, this has been driven chiefly by household consumption. So people literally, as citizens, we are buying ourselves into a marginal sort of growth path. But it's really not sustainable. This is growth, as she puts it, not driven by production and investment. That's really where you want to see the big numbers coming in, and that'll carry households. Households can't carry themselves, and that's unfortunately what we are seeing in these figures. That there's too much reliance on the people like you and me doing our grocery shopping or whatever else we're buying, and that somehow just keeping the growth rate ticking upwards at a barely adequate level. So yeah, just those few points.
All right, let's move on to our next one, and this I think we can have a bit of a broader discussion about crime and what it means to actually sort of solve crime. So this is facilitated by this story in the Daily Maverick called The Mayor versus the Minister, and it's a discussion of a plan by the city of Cape Town to build a sort of security barrier along a particularly dangerous stretch of the N2 highway, which the story refers to as sometimes being called the Hell Run. This part of Cape Town was often been attacks on motorists. The story came about because Musi Maimane of Build One South Africa, with Musi Maimane, which is the full name of that party, I believe, still, has asked a question in Parliament of the police minister, Feroz Kachalia, asking whether a wall would actually address the city's underlying crime issues. And, of course, being from a different political party, I think the minister was happy to say, no, not really, it won't. It may temporarily help a little bit keep crime away from the road, but it wouldn't really deal with the proper causes of crime in the area. There needs to be more foot patrols by police and more policing activity. The city in January tabled its adjustment budget, which had this plan for the wall, which is 115 million rand allocated over 2 years. There's some questions about, raised in this piece that I don't know more details of, but that the city would actually need to get permission from the province and also SANRAL to actually build this wall because it's on their property. There's this sort of, I think this leads into a larger question of, firstly, let me put it like this. It is kind of irritating to see the police minister saying, well, this wall is not really that much of a useful thing to do because, after all, you need more police patrols and more foot traffic and that kind of thing and proper policing. And I sort of go, well, I mean, yeah, that's, your job, though. Policing is a national competency for the most part. And, you know, here's the city is trying to do something. And, you know, whether it's actually going to work or not, I think can be debated. But it is a plan that seems like it might have some benefit to it. I don't know, Michael, just firstly on the wall itself, I mean, do you think it's a good idea?
It's quite a difficult one in a way. I mean, I think the point that if there is an important security risk and you have the means to address it and you don't address it, that to me would be irresponsible. And I think that's really the situation the city is in. It's inherited a kind of urban layout that casts poor people who are more likely to have high unemployment in their neighborhoods and high gangsterism and high drug abuse and so on, right next to a primary artery that leads between the sort of wonderfully appointed city center and other parts of the Cape and the major airport, virtually really the only airport in the region. So this is what it has inherited. It's inherited a situation where there are major risks, and should it just sit back and not do anything and say, well, until socioeconomic conditions improve, there isn't really anything we can do, and people will just have to live with the risk. I don't think that is acceptable. It's not rational. And so to talk about this issue, I think it doesn't mean we all need to sort of lower our sort of emotional responses to it. I do think there's a drawback in seeing every situation as a safety and security one, and responding to that sort of aspect of it, if only because what you tend to then to produce is safety and security consequences. If there's a wall, you either can't ever take it down again, or people will only want to break it down or jump over it. But that's not all. That's not the entire conversation. And I think it's quite reasonable for the city to be sitting down and thinking, well, in the short term at least, what is it that we need to do on this major artery where there have been, it's not as if they're imagining what might happen. Things, terrible, terrible things have happened along that route, often to tourists who are arriving in South Africa and don't appreciate the risk of this relatively short bit of the freeway that they have to use. There is no other route. So it does require a measured, sensible discussion. And I think it's absolutely perverse that, you know, a politician should ask the Minister of Police about this instead of saying to the Minister of Police, well, what in fact are you doing that has necessitated the city of Cape Town to think in terms of building a wall? What is the problem with your policing and the flats?
It's a sort of leading question. Obviously all MPs from parties do this, but I thought this was particularly ill-judged by Mr. Mamani.
Yes. You're giving the space to the minister to give this really quite relaxed and measured response to say, well, we don't really think, whatever. And it's just feeding into the whole narrative, and it's taking all the attention away from what the real problem is, which is quite substantially bad policing on the one hand, or insufficient policing on the one hand. Along the other, of course, the same party's economic policies, which are sustaining very high levels of deprivation and poverty. It's a shame.
I sometimes get a bit frustrated by debates around crime, because I think people very often tend to sort of polarize into either focusing way too much on the socioeconomic stuff, or alternatively, kind of longing for some sort of authoritarian police state to just brutally crush everyone who breaks the law at any time. I think that a lot of the time that's more of an emotional response, that when you kind of get people in a sober mood, they won't buy to one of those extremes. But I think in the public debate, it can be you can see it sometimes, particularly on sort of social media or something, when bad things happen to criminals, people take a sort of glee. There's so much of this pent up frustration in South Africa because of how brutalized we are by crime.
Yes.
It's one of those great moments of national unity where South Africans of all races, classes, and whatever all get very excited when there's the criminals being caught or brutalized or whatever. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I haven't fallen prey to such base instincts as well. But it is important to recognize, I think, that when you kind of overdo it, you firstly often don't really, you kind of just end up in a sort of escalating war of arms with the criminals, particularly when they're organized gangs, which is, of course, what the Western Cape has. And, there are deeper problems that you do need to solve. Some of them are very difficult to solve from a government end. They're to do with these sort of like kind of cultural family decay that's happened in places, particularly places that have been very poor, dislocated for a long time. But you do also need jobs and you need services and all these other things. So the socioeconomic stuff is there. But at the same time, if you go too far down that road, you end up with this kind of naive, silly, hippie nonsense, which was perhaps most infamously expressed in the US and the whole defund the police thing.
Yeah,
essentially, the proposition was, we shouldn't, be bullying people with police. We should solve all of these things with social workers. We must replace all the police with social workers, which is also just, sort of hopelessly naive. And I think completely gets distracted from the reality that, no, law and order is a fundamental part of human existence. There are people who will always try to prey on others, unfortunately. And, to keep law and order is the first role, is the first duty of any state. And unfortunately, in South Africa, I think we've kind of been pulled between these two. You sometimes get sort of activist-y types who will push the one direction a little bit too much, and then you get a lot of ordinary people who are so fed up with crime that they push way too far in the other direction. They're like, "No, we must just be shooting people in the streets," kind of thing. And I think neither is properly helpful. What you need is reliable, constant, professional police. And that's exactly what we don't have. And, at the end of the day, that is what the police minister should be working on. Now, I think this police minister is probably the best we've had in a while, but, the police force, shall we say, continues to be in the huge crisis that it's in. We haven't seen, I think, any major change since the Matlango Commission revealed that, apparently half of the senior leadership of the police is closely associated with some of the worst criminals in the country. I think this whole sort of debate is a little bit kind of missing the point, and that, maybe there would be more to be said here on what could actually be done if the province had more policing powers or the city had more policing powers, because then you could say, well, the city has the tools to fix it, so why are they putting up a wall instead of, doing these other things? Any final thoughts on this one, Michael?
I think that's a very good point, and quite fundamental to where the city finds itself. We aren't talking about a city that's ineffective and that is indifferent to people wherever they live. I think its record is pretty good, but it does have a real problem on its hands. It has limited scope to tackle them. And it's to its credit trying to do something, and I think that's absolutely important. The thing that we've often emphasised in our discussions is the fact that they aren't necessarily quick fixes. There's no obvious solution to anything, other than what we know we can rely on, which is a solid, responsible political process. We have to have people, the wider public, engaged in this. They have to be brought to see that their interests lie in participating in this process, that they have complete access to. We're all equivalent in this. This is really the key thing, and it's through that process that we're going to get the changes we really want. It's going to take time. They're not always going to be predictable. The outcomes are not always assured, but at least if we can begin to focus on the importance of that process, and that it is going to take, it's a long haul, but that individual choices of people, when they sit at the, when they get to the ballot box, wherever it is, they're having to make a choice, that is really what is going to matter. And that's where you get changes that really do impinge on your every single moment of your life, as we discovered in 1994. It's just one of those things.
not to harp on this, but I've just actually seen what's happening right now as a report on social media. Something related to this topic is going on, which is that as per the promises made in the State of the Nation address, the army is currently being deployed to a bunch of high crime neighborhoods in Gauteng. And as we speak, you know, there's a video that was taken a few minutes ago in Westbury in Johannesburg, which has had absolutely terrible gang violence, of people coming out of their homes and cheering the arrival of soldiers. And I think this is exactly the sort of quick fix solution that, you know, may be popular in the moment, and I'm sure there may be some good done by it in the short term, but soldiers are not police, and also soldiers are not going to stay there forever. And so when they leave, you're just going to go back to these other problems unless you fix the fundamentals. Okay, last topic related to our first one. Some calculations by the IMF suggest that South Africa is really seeing some seriously negative effects from regulations on the performance of firms, and that this is in particular damaging for small firms in South Africa, which are having their productivity really hampered by increases in time spent dealing with regulations. And unfortunately, South Africa is a country which, despite having a state that's not able to enforce some of the basics of law and order, spends a lot of time trying to enforce micromanaging rules on businesses as far as it can, as far as it has capacity. And so we have all sorts of rules, everything from, of course, the race stuff about, you know, how many employees of this color or that color, or this gender or that gender, or disabled, not disabled, all of the rules about licenses, all of the rules about competition, particularly when you get to bigger businesses. And the net result of this is that, you know, maybe there are some marginal benefits here or there, but by and large, what we're really just doing is strangling the productivity of firms. And this IMF, these IMF calculations confirm this. Michael, I mean, you know, this really connects strongly back to our first point of changing the fundamentals, and overregulation of so much of our economy is one of the fundamentals that is holding us back from becoming the society that we really could be.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking a moment ago, what we require is a leap of faith, but in fact, in a sense, what we require is really a leap of logic. And the thing that I was thinking of was, as you were speaking, was the shift we need to make is to trust in the agency of private enterprise. And by private enterprise, I don't simply mean businesses. This is obviously reflected in these graphs that we're looking at. The IMF has made these calculations, but it's the enterprise of people acting privately without being told what to do, without being constrained. They are reacting to what they need, what they think is good for themselves, their households, their communities. It's not always absolutely right. They're inevitably going to be areas where we want to have health controls, we want to have, you know, basic standards of hygiene and so on. But it is that fundamental leap of logic that the society needs to take. For governors, legislators, to think to themselves, well, most South Africans actually would thrive if the country thrived, and they want to thrive. No human being wants to be saddled with undue burdens and constant difficulties that make it almost impossible to do anything. What is it that we can do to lighten that burden, to make it more effective, to stimulate the very thing that we can see works, which is the private enterprise of those hundreds of millions of choices that are made every single day? If we can just allow that, the power, the tremendous dynamism that's contained in all those decisions, we can release that. That is an enormous force for good in a society. And I think, you know, once that sort of leap of logic, like, you know, instead of calling it a leap of faith, is made, I think people can begin to see, okay, well, the few things that we really do want to focus on and protect people from risk are these. It's this health risk or that hygiene risk or this environmental problem. And forget about all the other things, because people more or less will figure out what's good for them. We all know more or less what's good for us. And we're also quite, I think, as free societies, quite self-correcting. We have a sense of, you know, what's good for us and what's good for other people. It's not always a selfish pursuit.
It's more than that. It's not just keeping people safe. It's also so often that businesses are seen as a way by government to socially engineer. And obviously, yeah, the number one in this is race, right? And they'll say, well, you know, going to say you need to hire this many people of this gender, this race, whatever. But also, you see this in particularly with big businesses. Even the DA's plan sort of has this stuff as well to replace BE with, is saying, okay, well, you know, you must be doing this for the community and this and this. And so you'll have, like, for example, a mine, and I'll get told, you need to build a school, you need to build this kind of infrastructure. And it's like asking, it's too overcomplicated. It's asking too many things to be done by everyone. And so, you know, when you have a business that's also having to run a scholarship program and a school and this and that, you're just going to get all sorts of waste. You're going to get all sorts of muckiness. And, you know, at the end of the day, that means you're less productive. And when you're less productive, fewer jobs, less economy, more people without the resources to improve their lives.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, those figures we were using earlier that Amlu shared with us about exports, imports, fixed capital investment, these things all speak to the very dynamics that you're describing. It is just so fundamental to how a dynamic society succeeds. I think that is absolutely true.
All right. Well, I'm currently melting because of the weather. I think we're going to have to call it there. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting today. We will be back, of course, tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. So signing out from a very hot Cape Town. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.